This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 28th of August 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Gillian DeBias, and today I'm joined by film critic Jason Solomons. We'll be getting musical at the cinema this week as Straight Outta Compton, the biopic about Californian hip-hop group N.W.A. and new dance music flick We Are Your Friends, both hit the big screen. And then we'll discuss the reissue of Lickleys. That's all to come right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Jason, and thanks so much for taking the time out, as I gather you're very busy promoting your book.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, my new book, Woody Allen, Film by Film, is out September the 10th in the UK. I just got hold of it, so I'm very
well,
happy.
Well, so for all those Woody Allen fans out there, you know, when they flick through the pages and settle into it, what kind of different opinion view of Woody Allen and his flicks are they going to discover?
I think they'll find some that, you know, that they'll realise that some which have a bad reputation don't deserve it. I hope it's a critical reassessment. I mean, you know, there are 50 films in there, you know, you're going to hit some duds there occasionally, and I won't defend all of them, but there are some that you may have missed, there are some that you haven't seen. I mean, who you know, and everyone's seen 45-50 Woody Allen films. I hope, and the gorgeousness of his work, you know, the photography is always top notch, the stars are always fantastic. I mean, whether you like the films some better than others, the craft is there, and this guy is the film writer par excellence. I mean, the guy can write movies, they're so effortlessly, and I hope you get that from kind of reassessing the work. It's like watching them all in 10 minutes. You can flick through it. I mean, it's a big book, but you can read it too, because I wrote it. But, you know, the quotes are funny, and there's some philosophy there as well, which, you know, as we'll find out this week, you know, not every movie has a kind of global world moral philosophy to it. And all the Woodies do.
And so many people think they know Woody Allen, but yet they forget why they love him. So definitely worth checking out Jason Solomon's book, Woody Allen, Film by Film. Now, let's get on to our first film for this week, which details the lives of the members of the notorious American gang N.W.A., the multi-million record-selling hip-hop group. They made headlines glorifying crime and drugs and have been hailed as one of the greatest rap troops of all time. The film title takes its name from perhaps their most famous track, Straight Out of Compton, and follows the group as youngsters trying to make a name for themselves in the music industry back in the 1980s. Now, Jason, maybe first set up for us a little bit about how significant the place and the times were.
Of course, we're dealing with Los Angeles. It used to be South Central LA, and the Compton was a neighborhood not particularly put on the map until the guys from there formed this band and made an album Straight Out of Compton, which became the kind of touchstone of gangster rap in 1988 when the album came out. It was one of the first ones to have that now ubiquitous parental advisory lyrics slapped on it, which of course was a red rag to all consumers and made it sell millions more copies. And now, interesting, the graphic of that, the design of that, is what they're using for the poster for the title of Straight Outta Compton as well. So what we're doing is kind of tapping into a kind of folkloric time in American history. And of course, this is set around the build-up to the famous 1991 LA riots, which were inspired, of course, by the beating of Rodney King. And that plays out very much in the background of this. So it's a cultural biopic that chooses a musical moment, but it's also about friendship and the ghetto and kind of staying together. So it's got all the tropes of like a musical biopic where someone sits there and says something and goes, that's a good lyric for a song. There's always those eureka moments, you know, and it doesn't kind of go away from those cheesy moments. But these moments are kind of hardcore because they're about when there's police brutality. So when Ice Cube and Dr. Dre and Eazy-E, who are part of N.W.A., all names who are now very, very famous in the music skate world, when they get a, you know, a random shakedown by the LAPD for just hanging out on the corner practicing their rhymes, this becomes the anthem, then becomes the famous riotous anthem, Fuck the Police. So this becomes the source for the lyrics. So when people say it was, as you sort of said in your intro, they were criticised for glamorising gang violence, gang behaviour. Rap reality was what people called it. They were actually kind of just drawing on stories from their streets. And, I'm a big fan of that kind of hip-hop storytelling, which Ice Cube's famous I Didn't Have to, It Was a Good Day. That's a real storytelling song. And I do love those. But the lyrics in N.W.A., Straight Outta Compton, are fierce. They are angry. And the film really delves into that. And I think, it, as one of the musical biopics, it's been a big hit in America, quite a surprise hit, I guess. I think it's one of the better ones about friendship and sticking together and being in the band, and then money and drugs and violence overtaking that.
Well, let's have a listen to a clip from Straight Out of Compton. Here, N.W.A. are speaking at a press conference.
Like, y'all just got a snapshot of how Americans really feel. We gave the people a voice. We gave the people truth.
Yeah, but your songs, they glamorize the lifestyle of gangs, guns, drugs.
Our art is a reflection of our reality. What you see when you go outside your door?
I know what I see.
And it ain't glamorous.
You get AKs from Russia and cocaine from Colombia.
And ain't none of us got a passport, so... Yeah. Might want to check the source.
Yeah, next question.
Will you be more careful about what you say, how you say it?
No. Probably not, no.
Why? Freedom of speech includes rap music, right? But we exercising our First Amendment, as far as I'm concerned.
And the government wrote that.
A clip out of Straight Out of Compton. Now, tell us a little bit about the director and his music background and how maybe that helped give some kind of insight into these.
Well, we should say that also that this film is produced by Ice Cube and Dr. Dre. In the way that history is written by the winners, this, you know, films are produced by the people who survived. So there will
survived.
Yes. So there will be people who kind of say, well, that's not quite how it happened. There is a kind of, you know, a kind of whitewashing, and it's already overtaken Dr. Dre, who recent allegations came out of sort of domestic abuse that were whitewashed in the film. I mean, there, I have to say also, if you're looking for kind of fully formed or even fully clothed female characters, you won't find them in this film. You know, gangster rap has long been attacked for its kind of misogynistic kind of outlook, and that is in the film here. But it would be wrong to kind of say that they were this is a story of five guys from the ghetto, intelligent guys, it has to be said. Dr. Dre is the producer, and he's now kind of the world's billionaire mogul, selling headphones to the world. And this is the sort of rap that kind of gave us modern American music. Kanye West and Jay-Z now headlining Glastonbury. Well, you know, back then it was still ghetto music, and it really put it on the map. The director, F. Gary Gray, has a history of music videos and really has never done anything quite as good as this before. And he really captures a time and a place very well. There's a glamour to it, but he's very good at the club scenes, and that's notoriously hard to do in music. I find the concerts kind of get, you know, they look a bit anodyne. The camera can kind of alienate us slightly from the atmosphere. It's really good at capturing that raw energy of both the group as how they were on stage. It's like kind of being part of a football team and how they all chime and work together, and the energy and anger and I suppose the what we call a whoop of joy that came from the crowd that kind of fed off. And then it kind of has its apogee in the scene where singing Fuck the Police in Detroit, the Detroit police were very, very nervous about this, and it did cause a riot. They kind of helped provoke it, but they said, don't perform that song. Of course, they go ahead and perform that song. And we see, you know, footage of the real riot as well. We see footage, some news footage, which I always like in a music biopic, where someone, you know, where people are stamping on copies of the album, and even the cassette, if you remember such things.
Straight Out of Compton is in cinemas in North America, Europe, and the Middle East now, and will continue to roll out throughout the autumn. Let's move on now to another film based around music, but this time we have Zac Efron as a budding DJ hoping to break onto the EDM scene. He is, however, distracted by his mentor's girlfriend, Sophie. Jason, the film plot sounds a little bit more like a romance than a serious look at dance music. Will audience who are really into the scene be cringing when they see this movie?
They will, unfortunately, yeah. I mean, America took a long time to cotton on to what they now have co-opted and called EDM. But, you know, we, in the UK, we've been raving since for a long time now. So we've seen movies attempt to kind of capture the scene. And it is notoriously difficult. There's not been any great movies about rave culture. And this is squarely in that tradition. It's not a great movie about rave culture. Some bits of it are very well done. There's music by Prism, for example, and it's very electronic and it's very much about sampling and trying to get together. But really, it's about Zac Efron and his, I mean, the guy works out. This is the guy who used to be in High School Musical. This guy's got guns now. I mean, he's a kind of hunky guy. And he sort of falls in love with like most people, with Emily Ratajkowski, who's the girl who's was in the Blurred Lines video and has now, because of that, blown up now, becoming a movie star. She's quite good, I suppose, but she doesn't really have that much to do apart from kind of waft around a bit and be a DJ's girlfriend. The DJ who becomes his mentor is played by Wes Bentley. There's a name to conjure with, and he's the best thing in the movie. It's not really good about the club scene. It's not really good about friendship. It's a very kind of weak movie, but it does have its kind of what I would call kind of five or six really good video moments, as if they're kind of videos accompanying the tracks. And so it's not without its kind of production value. Some of the stuff looks good, and Emily Ratajkowski, you know, wafting around, she does that quite well.
Well, let's have a little taster now. In this clip, Cole is with his mentor, James, discussing his tracks.
You were good out there, you know? You really know how to work a crowd.
Thanks, man.
You know, let's hear that track of yours again. You got it with you? Okay, here's the thing. The beginning sounds like Skrillex's brother made it, and then right here, that sounds like early Juan Atkins to me, which is good, but you're trying to be too many different people.
I want a lot of switches, I want a lot of transitions.
Yeah.
That's what's crushing it now.
All that was missing was a hashtag. Imitation is suicide. Emerson said that.
The sound of We Are Your Friends. Now, you were talking a little bit earlier about sampling. There's some interesting techniques, visual techniques that the director uses. Can you give us an idea of what we're going to see?
Yeah, because this is what's interesting. It's directed by Max Joseph, who's kind of one half of the MTV people who gave us the film Catfish and the series Catfish, which sort of, there's no reason why he would then go on to make a music film. But it is, you know, you've got to find a visual correlative for the kind of audio world that you're conjuring up. And otherwise, it's just kind of a lot of people with headphones twiddling knobs and kind of, you know, putting levers up and down. So they try and kind of take the samples from around the sort of ambient world. So the hum of an electricity pylon, the kind of flip of a coin. So he starts recording sounds from all over, rather like I suppose Matthew Herbert himself, the sound experimentalist, does really. But Zac Efron sort of does this and then creates it into a big track and with the sort of bits of dialogue that he's kind of sourced from around himself. And that bit of the movie, strangely enough, it sort of feels like an Antonioni movie, because there's kind of this urban alienation going on and out of which he creates this soundscape. But I'd like to say that, but maybe that's just because I'd seen what we're going to talk about next, L'Eclisse, and it's about that element. So I'm not going to quite give We Are Your Friends that intelligence, because it doesn't really know what it's doing as a movie. It's called We Are Your Friends. It's about these kind of four guys a bit, but it's not really about them. It kind of gets very much lost in itself, and the emotional climax never really happens.
Well, for those of you who are still tempted after that, We Are Your Friends is out now in the US of A, UK, Germany and New Zealand, amongst others, and will be hitting cinemas in Iceland, Singapore and Argentina very soon. Finally, Jason, we're going to talk about Michelangelo Antonioni's 1962 Italian drama, L'Eclisse, which has been remastered by Studio Canal this year, and it's ready for reissue now. Now, remind us a little bit of the kind of plot of this black and white film.
Yeah, if we can find it. I mean, the point with Antonioni...
So Italian.
There isn't a plot. I mean, he did, before this, he did L'Avventura, which was sort of set on one of the Aeolian islands, Panarea, I think, where they go and sort of wander around thinking there's a murder. There's not much plot in that one. La Notte is about a sort of party that never really happens in the night in Rome. And again, not much plot in that. And L'Eclisse, which is Italian for eclipse. Really, there's not much plot. Monica Vitti leaves her sort of old husband and takes up a relationship with a young stockbroker played by the devilishly handsome Alain Delon, and they kind of wander around Rome, a bit of the ruins and a bit of the modern. Antonioni's work is always about alienation in the modern city, trying to find connections within the modern city with all the with all that it entails. So you've got modern houses that are crammed with antique things. You've got Monica Vitti, who, for if you're a fashionista, this film is the thing, because you've got Delon looking super and modern, like nice tight kind of suits with great like sharp ties. You've got a beautiful white Alfa Romeo car that he drives around in. It's very similar in a way to Fellini's La Dolce Vita, mm-hmm. which is the more famous work and the warmer work, even though that's got a great chill to it. It's about the emptiness of that celebrity lifestyle. This is about the emptiness of all lifestyle and the difficulty of finding meaning amongst the kind of architecture of the city and the functioning of the city, the commercial of the city. There's a great, I mean, it's very now because it's about a stock market crash, which I never understand. I don't even understand trading places. I'm terrible with stock market things. But you know it's crashing, you know, and everyone goes a bit bonkers and their relationship kind of sort of fritters away into this kind of mystery of the city. This brilliantly beautiful Monica Vitti character with her clothes and her bangles and her necklaces that make sounds. And it's a very sensuous and eerie experience.
Well, talking of sounds, we're going to hear a clip from the film now. This is the moment that Pietro and Vittoria meet at the stock exchange.
Ho comprato le Finsidera 20. Guardi un po' quanto valgono.
Ne ho 2000.
Le tenga, fanno denaro. Tu non mi conosci, ma io sì. Come stai? Silenzio come per i giocatori di calcio.
Lo conoscevi?
Certo, ma sai, un minuto qua costa miliardi.
Ah.
A clip from Les Clés, and we could hear the stock exchange there. I gather they actually filmed on a Sunday in the real stock exchange and using real brokers to make it sound convincing. Is there some sort of meaning, allegory behind the stock exchange featuring so prominently, do you think?
I think so, because it becomes a sort of cumulative effect, because as we can hear there, it's just a lot of noise, and at some stage it just becomes a lot of people kind of throwing papers at each other. I don't think we're supposed to understand really what it's about. The very act of this kind of non-money changing hands, it's like Antonioni, one of his famous films is Blow Up, which he shot in London, where they have a tennis match where no one actually hits a ball or uses a racket. Sometimes there is no meaning in Antonio, and I think that he does the same thing to money here, because this is fortunes are changing hands, yet there's no money on screen, so it's all abstract. So I think that he's the eclipse itself here is the world kind of eating itself in a kind of unexplained kind of bubble of commerce. So it seems very, very now and very modern, as Antonio always does. He's the arch modernist. And the final sequence of Les Clés is very famous because it's normally what you get at the start of a movie, a series of establishing shots of kind of balconies and street lights and street lamps and benches and bus stops and kind of people waiting and faces. And then suddenly you realise, well, where's this? We're all lost. It's a big lost at the end, and it's terribly, terribly effective and brilliant.
The reissue of Les Clés will be showing in cinemas in France and in the UK. And if you're elsewhere, you can always buy or download the movie. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. Jason Solomon, thank you so much for joining us in studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again next Monday when we'll be speaking to Charlotte Burns from the Art Newspaper. But for now, thanks very much for listening and have a great weekend.